Blog Talk Radio.
Beautiful song, ladies and gentlemen. This is Jane Hoffman on the sub-midnight hour, 1 hour before midnight in Minnesota. So John's working tonight, and John, Don, and I have a show tomorrow night. And we have replaced our third theologian with more of a maverick in the lobbying industry. Don Harrell's from a background of lobbying in Reno, Nevada. He's a member of the Democratic Party. His wife is the chair of the NAACP, and he's involved with that. And he also does side lobbying for certain organizations. He's knowledgeable and skilled. I met him at the LA Times a long time ago in 1987. That's almost 30 years ago. So tonight's episode is about why some friendships have to die. If you can't stand for Jesus, you will fade. I've been in a number of trials this week, and I don't know if it's because I've turned more of my life over to the Lord, but I've had a change in my job. My son had a conflict at school that transformed into the category of bullying in which he was the victim. I had a conflict with a previous friend who I just wrote a nice note to after a year. And then he said something to the effect that I asked you not to contact me again. But actually I went back in the emails and he didn't. He just called me a bad name on his blog. So I don't know. Sometimes Christians have to stick their necks out, and it's not worth it on an earthly scale. Then while we were doing the show on personal struggles last week, one of my co-hosts misinterpreted what I said. Now, this particular co-host was friends with John Yoder, who loaned him $2,000 to publish a book that is actually a theological, cerebral book that not that many people will be interested in. I don't care what people do on their own time, you know, if they want to loan people $5,000 or $10,000, but it is an investment and it has to yield some type of fruitfulness. And I don't think this is the type of publication that's going to reel in a lot of money unless a college or church picks it up for a Bible study. Now, in John 15, 12 through 15, it says, "My command is this, love each other as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, that he laid down his life for his friends. You are my friends if you do what I command. I no longer call you servants because a servant does not know his master's business. Instead, I have called you friends, for everything that I have learned from my Father I have made known to you." So Jesus was primarily talking to his disciples in this passage. You know, Jesus had a he already knew when he came to earth that people were phony and people pretty much grandiose their lives on selfish scales. So Jesus already knew that there were only a handful of people he can count on. Well, when you're in the Christian community and you already have a close circle of friends, you need to be able to count on those people. And that's why my conviction is so strong tonight. I go to a Lutheran church in Duluth, and all the people there are kind and loving. Nobody would ever think of betraying another person. But if you are to dissolve any type of friendship within the Christian community, even if it's a theological difference or a, let's say, a moral difference, you should be able to confront that person. And the Bible commands us to confront that person alone in a room and then bring two or three others. Now, this is falling in the category of borderline ridiculousness. For someone to shut down completely and mentally. And I have a hunch it has something to do with a roommate that's controlling him, which, in my opinion, was never a healthy relationship to begin with because of the fact that there was one person who was unable to support themselves or barely supporting themselves and one who could not at all. So that makes for a spectacular brew of poverty. I'm going to read a couple more verses. "A man of many companions may come to ruin, but there is a friend that sticketh closer than a brother." Proverbs 18:24. Proverbs 22:24-25. "Do not make friends with a hot-tempered man. Do not associate with one easily angered, or you may learn his ways and get yourself ensnared." I don't have to mention the name of the person that I'm talking about, but I do have a couple more stories that may have been warning signs. Proverbs 27:17, "As iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another." James 4:4, "You adulterous people, don't you know that friendship with the world is hatred towards God? Anyone who chooses to be a friend of the world becomes an enemy of God." Job 16:20, "My intercessor is my friend, as my eyes pour out tears to God. On behalf of a man, he pleads with God as a man pleads for his friend." So, I want to speak about my life for a moment. The last 6 months, I've had to work a lot of overtime to pay off bills. I feel like I've tipped the scale a little, and maybe overindulged in that activity. When I do have free time, I write stories for a local paper on a weekly basis, whether I have time or not. I go to the gym. I give my son rides to McDonald's. I've been reluctant to go out at night as an adult. I don't know why. I think I'm a little scared to meet new people outside of work and my Bible church. I believe that people, when they get to a certain apex in life, and I'm 54 now, I don't have my family around except for some handful of relation, but I do have some relation up here that I visit periodically. I'm going through a trial now because luckily my schedule is shifting to better hours, so I'm happy about that. I'm blessed to have extra overtime when needed. But the people that I depend on, like John Yoder, Yale Butler, Gil York, I have a core, Tony, I have my twin sister, I have a core set of friends that I can bank on. My older sister, my friend Steve out here, some other friends out here that I don't want to mention their names. The Gamblers Anonymous support group. Those are my friends at the moment. I willingly chose to leave a city of 25 million because of the chaos. I was tired of navigating through traffic. I didn't have a strong vision for what my son's life would be when he turned 18. I didn't want him to go through the hassle of, you know, spending 25 minutes parking at junior college when he finished high school out there, like at LA Valley College. I don't know. It seemed like a difficult road. So I moved here. And when I moved here, I became somewhat isolated because I had to start all over again. And sometimes when you pull the rug up like that, you don't realize the impact until you actually do it. Now, the first year I lived here, I got to work in a school. I also got to work in a daycare. But then now I'm in a job where it's not so physically taxing, and I like it for the most part, even though it's emotionally trying. When I'm direct with my friends who are part of my close inner circle, I expect them to understand me. I don't expect major conflict. But in a show recently, one of my co-hosts, who's not my number two guy, but my number three guy, said that he disliked gay people. In fact, he borderline hated them. Now, even though Ernest and I didn't see eye to eye on our old network, I don't want to have a main co-host on my network diss gays. Because gays are a prominent part of the United States right now. They have many advocacy groups for their causes, and for someone to say that they dislike a whole group based on sexual preference was offensive to me, because I have gay friends, and I don't like or dislike them based on their sexuality. Now, hatred is a strong word. This person has had little contact with gays, and I didn't find that flattering. This person and I have never been in a strong emotional conflict, except for when I had, I witnessed one time when this friend of mine, I had a going away party when I left North Hollywood. He locked my friend out of his apartment. She pounded on the door, she called him, and he refused to answer. He was basically, he couldn't make it up to the second floor, and he was jealous that she could go somewhere that he couldn't. Other than that, the only types of dealings I've had with him are intellectual. I'm talking about topics that interest us historically and spiritually. But I am calling him out tonight. I don't see the love of Jesus on his face. He acts spoiled when he doesn't get his way, when his roommate is unable to provide for him in a certain situation. He gets angry. And I'm calling him out to be a better Christian. I don't have time for this. You know, I have a busy life. I need people that I can count on. And when somebody is, you cannot count on them and they don't provide an explanation, they become a fair weather friend. My true friends would not behave like that. I'm going to read a few more verses before I close tonight. A righteous man is cautious in friendship, but the way of the wicked leads them astray. Which Job 16:20-21, my intercessor is my friend as my eyes pour out tears to God. On behalf of a man, he pleads with God as a man pleads for his friend. So true friendships you'll go the distance for. You won't try to, you know, make political plays and be standoffish with somebody. Now, I did tell this person that I needed a break because I didn't. They were rude to me on the phone, and I gave them a short break, and he gave me a short break. But now it's time to resolve the problem or to move on. In Job 2:3, God said to Satan, "Have you noticed my friend Job? There's no one quite like him. Is there? Honest and true to the word, totally devoted to God and hating evil. He still has a firm grip on his integrity. You tried to trick me into destroying him, but it did not work." Some friends, it says in Proverbs 18:24, which is a different version, pretend to be friends, but a true friend sticketh closer than a brother. Friends come and go, but a true friend sticks by you like family. Matthew 11:19, when the Son of Man came, he ate and drank, and everyone said, "Look at this man. He is a glutton and a wine drinker, a friend of tax collectors and other outcasts." God's wisdom, however, is shown to be true by its results. Galatians 4:16, so then I am no longer your friend because I give true words. Let's go to that Bible passage. So let's read Galatians 4. There's also the danger of becoming too dependent on one friend. I could go more into a personal explanation of things I've witnessed, but I won't. But I say that as long as the son is a child, he is no different from a servant, though he is Lord of all, Galatians 4:1, but is under keepers and managers till the time fixed by the Father. So when we were young, we were kept under the first rules of the world. But when the time had come, God sent out his son, made of a woman and made under the law, that he might make them free who were under the law, and that we might be given the place of sons. And because you are sons, God has sent out the Spirit of His Son into our hearts, crying, "Abba, Father." Abba means daddy. So that you are no longer a servant, but a son. And if a son, then the heritage of God is yours. But at that time, having no knowledge of God, you were servants of those who by right are no gods. But now that you have come to have knowledge of God, or more truly, God has knowledge of you. How is it that you go back again to the poor and feeble first things, desiring to be servants to them again? You keep days and months and fixed times and years. I am in fear of you that I may have been working for you to no purpose. You want to know what that verse means? You keep days and months and fixed times and years. In other words, people are attached to their own landmarks on the calendar or own fixed times that they plan to celebrate things. They don't listen to the Spirit of God and not completely directed by His will. My desire for you, brothers, is that you may be as I am, because I am as you are. You have done me no wrong, but you have to acknowledge that with a feeble body I was preaching the good news to you for the first time. And you did not have a poor opinion of me because of the trouble in my flesh or put shame on it. But you took me to your heart as an angel of God, even as Christ Jesus. Where then is that happy condition of yours? Because I give you witnesses that, if possible, you would have taken out of your eyes and given them to me. So then, am I no longer your friend because I give you true words? Their interest in you is not good, but their desire is that you may be shut out so you may go after them. But it is good to have an interest in good cause at all times, and not only when I am present with you. My children, of whom I am again in birth pains till Christ formed in you, truly my desire is to be present with you now, using a changed voice, for I am troubled about you. Say, you who desire is to be under the law, do not give ear to the law. So what they're really talking about, the formation of faith and the dependence on the power of God versus just relying back on the law. But I do have a couple more things to say. When I first was confronted with a complex situation with Bob, I was emotionally upset, first how he initially handled it, and I decided on my own to make a break from it for just a few days. Then when I confronted him from a Christian angle in a persuasive manner, like kindness, I said, it's Lent season, we're both Christians, we need to resolve this. I felt like I have a direct attachment with him because John invested in his second book. My friend, who he met through me, made a $2,000 investment into his book. That person has an obligation to John now. He has an obligation to make sales, to promote the book, to go from church to church, to express the written content inside the book, the spiritual value that he discovered through Aramaic research. He has an obligation. And I have an obligation as a friend of my friends to see them through. If people are offended, it's because there's something in their own life that they can't look at. He's always been in a precarious living situation. He's been pulling the weight as far as the rent. I don't know any details from the last 1 or 2 years. It's vague to me. All I know is that when I went to Los Angeles in December, I mapped out one whole day for John and Bob. I also saw Mississippian that day, and I have other friends out there I couldn't see. I could only see Yale one night because she was going to Kentucky. My main concern was that and the church. But finally, we come to a point in life where we have to let go of even our long-term solid relationships if they're not working. And I'm ready to do that. But it wasn't until today, until I saw his lack of explanation and his lack of courtesy. Then I had to find a new radio host who is more reliable and kind. If you are a Christian, you have to be true to the heart, whether it's painful or good, to tell the truth. Don't leave people hanging. Don't put them in a position where they have to make a decision to let you go. That's why some friendships have to die, because some people cannot live the word of God. Some can preach it, but they can't live it. Goodbye, Bob. We'll miss you on the air. In Jesus' love, forgiveness, and mercy, may you find the truth and find peace in your heart.